Coming up on Tech News Today, Google may get into the streaming TV business. Aereo wins again in court. And the iPhone may or may not be coming sooner or later. All that more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, July 17th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, or online store. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT7. And by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and without oversight. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/twit and use the code TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zakhtar.
I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we try to keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world. We start each time with the top 10 stories of the day. We call it the News Fuse. Last night, pretty much immediately after I struggled with the crappy Google Maps on iPad map to figure out my drive to Comic-Con, Google updated its Google Maps app for iOS. The map now fits the iPad screen in that version and tweaks both the iPad and iPhone versions to look similar to the new Android version. Maps now has live traffic, updates, and adds indoor maps for select shopping malls, airports, and transit stations.
Google wants to build its own streaming TV service, so says the Wall Street Journal. The report says Google's been meeting with media companies to negotiate for TV channels streamed over broadband connections to compete with companies like Comcast and Time Warner. Google already has its TV platform and set-top boxes and televisions and gigabit fiber up and running in a few cities, but it would need licensing deals to carry media channels via video stream and could face a price premium as it would be the new kid on the block.
Microsoft posted to its TechNet blog that it is requesting permission from the Attorney General of the United States to share publicly information as to how it handles national security requests for customer information. Microsoft says that the Constitution should allow the company to share more information, but it is being stopped by the U.S. government. Microsoft says the U.S. has not responded to its petition filed back on June 19th to publish the volume of national security requests it's received.
Well, Google Glass is all grown up now. It has its first security flaw. Yay. The security researchers at Lookout have discovered a security flaw that lets them capture data being sent from the device to the web without the user's knowledge. Google Glass always looks for QR codes, and it decodes them automatically. It also connects to Wi-Fi networks encoded in QR codes. So you know where this is going. Researchers created a QR code that got Glass to connect to their Wi-Fi access point where a man-in-the-middle attack could be conducted. The flaw was disclosed to Google and has since been fixed.
Another iPhone cycle, another report about delays in the iPhone cycle. Taiwanese publication The Commercial Times reports that Apple may delay the iPhone 5S from the expected September-October timeframe until the end of the year after the design was changed to feature a larger 4.3-inch Retina display screen. But Jefferies analyst Peter Misek predicts Apple's manufacturing partners will begin churning out the iPhone 5S later this month, and that Apple's long-rumored lower-cost iPhone is already in production.
There's a new Tumblr app for iOS, and what's new with it? Something called security, because the older iOS app apparently transmitted login information, including passwords, in plain text. Now, Tumblr has fixed the problem with an update to the iOS app. On the Tumblr staff blog, the company asks anyone who has used the older app to change your password. The Android app doesn't appear to be affected.
The European Commission looked over Google's proposal to separate promoted links from native search to end the antitrust investigation. And the European Commission said, not enough. Or some European accent. European Competition Commissioner Joaquin Almunia also wrote a letter to Google's executive chairman, Eric Schmidt, requesting that the company improve the offer.
P2P platform BitTorrent wants to be associated less with piracy and more as a competitor to cloud syncing services from Dropbox and Google. The company is taking Sync, which is its own file synchronizing service, into beta from alpha and opening up the platform to more users by adding more features and an Android app, iOS app, on the way, says the company. Sync is free, but a BitTorrent spokesperson says the company will eventually launch paid premium services aimed at enterprises and power users.
Chalk up yet another win for Aereo. CBS had appealed the Second Circuit Court's ruling that Aereo was legal, asking that the full panel of judges, that's known as en banc, rehear the case. The court polled its judges and found that not enough of them wished to rehear the case. Judge Denny Chin, however, issued a blistering dissent to the decision, calling Aereo a sham.
The China Internet Network Information Center says that China now has 591 million internet users. That's a 10% rise compared to last year. And that would mean that 44% of the country's population is online, thanks to wireless devices like smartphones.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, or online store. Yesterday afternoon, I was updating the calendar on Sword and Laser, and thank goodness I was using Squarespace. It's so darn easy. It's drag and drop. It's exceptionally well designed. Anything, their layout engine is amazing. It lets you customize pages in just a few seconds. You just add blocks of content, photos, videos, text, whatever you need, social media content, and then immediately preview the layout as you go. In just a few clicks, their style editor lets you select fonts, colors, layouts, customize those templates, make them uniquely yours without getting into all the CSS and HTML unless you want to. Squarespace has an award-winning design team too. These designs not only look great, but they adapt on the fly. It's one of my favorite things about Squarespace is when I look at my site on a phone, it looks right. It looks like it was designed specifically for that screen. It's not crippled in some way as a mobile version or anything. It's the full site fitting in that screen. Same thing on a tablet, same thing on a laptop, same thing on a desktop. That's what I love about Squarespace. The best mobile experience you can get connects all your social media accounts. And don't forget about the powerful and flexible e-commerce solution. Squarespace integrates all your website needs into one platform. Domains, design, development, commerce, hosting, and 24/7 customer support. Don't take my word for it, though. Go try it out for free. You just sign up for a free account. You don't need to give them a credit card or anything. Just start building your website. Then, if you decide to purchase it, use offer code TNT7 and get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. That's monthly and annual plans. And don't forget, those annual plans come with a free domain registration. That's squarespace.com. Use that offer code TNT7. Everything you need to create an exceptional website. We thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. Joining us now to discuss the stories of the day, it's good to have Jason Heiner, editor-in-chief of Tech Republic, on the show. Good to have you back, Jason.
Hey, always a thrill to be here.
And congratulations on the new redesign. We were talking about it a little bit before the show. It looks great.
Thank you. Thank you. Lots of hard work. You know, hat tip to all of our product people and engineers, too, who just worked their tails off to get it done.
Well done. Let's jump right in, Ayaz, and start talking about this rumor that Google might be pitching an online TV service.
Yeah, so it's from the Wall Street Journal, so that's a pretty credible source, saying Google's looking to... I like that. So it's a pretty credible one, a sort of credible
I've
one.
I've heard of them.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, this newspaper, as it were, the Wall Street Journal, reports that Google is looking into launching an online version of pay TV, and it says that Google's approached media companies about licensing their content for an internet TV service that would stream without traditional... Sorry, would stream with traditional TV program. The New York Times had a little addendum to the report saying no deals are imminent, so that's crushing our hopes and dreams right now. In at least one case, though, Google has provided a demonstration of the product already. And now to get decent rates for over-the-top TV services, the journal believes that that Google and other companies will have to accept the standard programming bundles. So no a la carte, just big fat bundles if Google's going to get this. And the journal says this is Google's actual second go at this. Apparently, they tried this out 2 years ago and obviously failed because we don't have that service. The same journal report talked about Intel's over-the-top service, which we've heard about before. But in this report, they're talking about Intel's plans to launch it by the end of the year. Apparently, also, Sony is working on an over-the-top internet service. This I had not heard before. Status is not clear. But Sony's service could launch before Intel, and Sony plans to stream its services to Sony devices like the PlayStation, TV sets, Blu-ray players, And the New York Times also spotlighted a service by Cox Communications, which is already testing in very small markets, selling a bundle of nearly 100 cable channels to its internet-only subscribers. So they're already messing with this. They didn't have a full comment on what's going to happen there. Jason, if TV over the internet is simply going to be bundles and bundles and bundles, and it's pretty much the same as what we had before, is this going to be the great thing that everybody thinks it's going to be?
Yeah, certainly not, right? I mean, I'll be honest. I don't think the cable and satellite companies, or ultimately even the providers, because they're passing a lot of that money on, right, to the content companies. I don't think that that whole industry is quite desperate enough yet to do one of these moves. I think that they've got to really feel it pretty hard. I mean, cable and satellite has kind of stalled out, so. So they're getting more nervous, but they're the ones that are getting disintermediated because they're just passing money, right, from customers to content providers. And they do it by locking you in and making you pay for everything, even though you may only, I think the average customer uses 5 to 10 channels regularly. And they've made this business of making them pay for so many. So that's what's destined to get disintermediated, but I don't think that these content companies are quite desperate enough to do it. I don't think that it's that imminent, or I'd be surprised if it was. But I think we're going to get to the point before too long where they start losing revenue. Once their revenue starts dropping, you know, and I think you see companies like HBO are sort of the ones that are kind of leaders in this. They can be because it's one channel primarily, where they know that the time is going to come where they're, they could get hurt by by people pulling the plug, going without cable. And so they're starting to do this app thing, but it's totally of like, oh, you can only do it if you subscribe to the channel right now. But you can see the day where they're going to eliminate that. As soon as it's financially beneficial for them, they can eliminate that. And then all of a sudden they've got everybody who's already downloaded their app and they can just get HBO itself. I still think that we're just in a world where it's just there's not enough revenue loss for these content companies yet that they're going to let them do a la carte and do it themselves. But we're getting close, right? MLB, HBO, increasingly, I think we're going to see others more than we'll see a service from Google.
I feel like it's a big Mexican standoff, right? Where mm-hmm. you have Netflix with their gun, like, we're going to do original content. And you've got you've got the cable companies going, we're doing TV everywhere. We want to stay in control of this. And then you've got tech companies like Google and Apple and Sony out there saying, we would like to be the new cable companies. But everybody's waiting for somebody else to blink because nobody wants to lose the advantage that they already have. And they got the music industry paved the way when they got burned by giving all the glory to Apple for music, and they regretted that decision later on and had to kind of pull themselves out from under that. So we're kind of on the edge. We're on the precipice of this, and the clock that's ticking is bandwidth pervasiveness. I think what's giving the cable companies time is that not enough people either have access to high bandwidth or perceive that they have enough access to high bandwidth to give up cable and do everything over the internet and just give up some of that other stuff. There's sports is another gun to people's heads there as well. But yeah, this is interesting to see Google jump in this because of Google Fiber. They know how the industry works because they are mm-hmm. a traditional cable carrier now.
Well, that's the interesting thing. I mean, in markets where Google Fiber exists, and, you know, admittedly, there's just a couple of them in the U.S., a few of them up and running. But that is, I mean, that's an attractive option. If you can get that, why wouldn't you want it? So if Google has to pay a bit of a premium on the same sort of cable package that people are already used to, but bundled in with that, if you're going to pay roughly the same amount of money and you get some crap channels, but your internet speeds are vastly greater than what you're used to, that's attractive for consumers. And Google can kind of be a loss leader on something like that for a while as it builds out we provide not only bandwidth, but also content that you're used to getting.
Yeah, I think Google's shown that they're willing to be do this as a loss leader. Apple, I don't think would, but Google, you know, for the greater good as they see it, which is, you know, more serving their primary business, I think you're right, Sarah. I think they would take the loss on this, even if it meant them, you know, having for the foreseeable future. I mean, Google fiber itself is a loss leader for the foreseeable future. But you look, I mean, they're willing to play the long game here. And so I think they are the ones that could potentially disrupt it. I just think that for them, I kind of doubt they'll do it unless they can get some more concessions, like the, you know, not bundling or that kind of thing. Because I think if they're going to do this, if anybody's going to do this, you have to solve a problem or you have to do something new, right? And if I think one of the problems that everybody knows with cables, people pay for a lot of stuff they don't need and they're tired of it. And it's been getting more, they've been paying more and more and more, and they're sort of at their limit. And then the other is the sort of interactive TV, the sort of channel app kind of thing where, you know, you can do some cooler stuff once you connect these things digitally, and you also bring about the possibility to interact with that, to see something and to, you know, vote directly on a TV channel, right? If it's a sort of reality or, you know, game show kind of thing, or interact directly with an ad, which obviously is huge money potentially. So those are, I think that's the innovative part. And then the problem that's got to be solved is the whole bundling issue. I think that's the killer. And that's the showstopper. And I hope that Google will sort of push as hard as it can, even if it means taking a loss for a while to sort of, you know, break that stranglehold.
The interesting story that we heard in the news fuse that goes along with this is the Aereo case, Aereo winning again in court. This is far from over for them, obviously. They've got another case going on in Boston. CBS could still appeal this case. There's a differing case with another company in California that, if it had been Aereo, would have ruled against Aereo. So this could still end up in the Supreme Court. What I found interesting in the Aereo case in the Second Circuit was Judge Denny Chin's dissent, where he said, indeed, the hardware and technology in Cablevision, he's referring to the precedent with the DVR decision from Cablevision, and the antennas and wiring at issue here, referring to Aereo, are fast becoming obsolete in this area of, in this arena or era of cloud and wireless technology. Courts should follow Congress's lead and resist the urge to look under the hood at how these processes technically work. I want to go around the horn and get each of your opinion. Should a judge ignore the technical workings and look at the effect? Because as they've shown, judges and Congress have shown, they aren't very good at understanding the technology. But should they? Jason, I want to hear your opinion first.
I mean, because I work for CBS, that they're our parent company, I probably should recuse myself from this one, because I wouldn't be speaking for CBS. And even if I was speaking for myself, I think most people would question my loyalty on that one.
Sure, that's understandable. I'm just, in general, though, if maybe I can phrase the question so you can answer it. In general, should courts and Congress take technical underpinnings into account, or just the effects of how the technology works?
Yeah, so in general, I think they misunderstand them greatly. They have a history of it. And so I think that they should totally look at what the implications of and try to understand. And even if it means they have to study or have a committee do it, or, you know, somebody really understand what the potential effects of and repercussions and implications of a technology is, that's what they should focus on, I believe.
All right, Ayaz, what do you think?
Okay, so I read the dissent this morning and wanted to see if this guy was making any sense. So Judge Chin was talking about not looking under the hood because the law basically abhors getting an absurd result. So if theoretically you can't get to point B by taking route A, why can you use route C to get to B? The weird thing is tax law works like this just fine. If you do an order of like A, B, C instead of C, D, A, or whatever it would be, that allows you to get results that are different, have different tax implications. So the law has gone both ways on this when it comes to tax, and it's really about the case law deciding how these things are going to be settled out. When I was reading his dissent, one of the big issues I had with it is that because of the whole copyright implications, we're talking about transmitting publicly. Now, whether Aereo is transmitting, that seems to be, let's say that's a given, but the public nature of it seems to be the question, because if there's a single antenna per user, is that good enough for a non-public performance, thereby not having a copyright implication whatsoever? No infringement means that Aereo can continue. It looks like to me that it's not public, and that's what the judges on the bench were saying flat out. They're not going to rehear this. They don't actually write an opinion if they don't bother to rehear something. So the first court's opinion, that stands true just fine. And these dissents are normally used for appeals where you can go, oh, yeah, we can point to Judge Chin's reasoning and maybe use that. But I don't think Chin's dissent means much in the long run.
Sarah, what do you think about this idea of ignoring the tech?
It's a really interesting question. I'm pretty much of the mind that if I've got an antenna at home and I'm able to grab over-the-air signals, or there's an antenna in a warehouse somewhere that is allowing me to grab over-the-air signals, it's pretty much the same thing. Now, of course, the technology exists because I have to have an antenna in my house or it doesn't work. So I understand both sides of the argument. You know, a company saying, wait a second, Aereo is doing something that shouldn't technically be feasible. So we have to look at how it's working under the hood and how it's infringing. But in essence, I guess I have to agree that in the end, it doesn't really matter that much. This does seem like still a bit of a stopgap measure. Let's give people access to channels, you know, at high quality using some method that's kind of going around the law a little bit. And not long from now, we're going to be getting all of our information over the internet anyway, and it won't matter as much.
Yeah, there's something practical about this that in Denny Chin's dissent that does appeal to me. That, you know, if this was the best way to do things, the way Aereo is doing it, cable companies would have set up multiple antennas and rented them out, but it's not. And so he's trying to say, let's look at the effect. The effect is rebroadcasting, but the law is written the way the law is written. So it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out in the end. We talked a lot yesterday about Marissa Mayer's one-year anniversary as CEO of Yahoo. And yesterday afternoon, she took to the video to talk about the Yahoo earnings. What did we find out, Sarah?
Yeah, she was not afraid to stream the video, as I'm sure journalists were happy to see her as well. So Yahoo had, in general, good results. Reported net income of $331 million, or 30 cents per share. The non-adjusted earnings, or non-generally accepted accounting principled earnings, were 35 cents per share. Revenue of $1.135 billion, which included traffic acquisition costs. Excluding that, Yahoo posted revenue of about $1.071 billion. What's interesting about this is how it breaks out. Yahoo's net income that could be attributed to its 24% stake in Alibaba rose 203% to $669 million. So this is a company that obviously Yahoo and Alibaba were more closely related not too long ago, and now Yahoo has pretty much let them be autonomous, but still has that 24% stake. And Alibaba is making a killion. It's interesting, too, that in some ways the companies are sort of on a parallel track, even though Alibaba is really an e-commerce company. Alibaba recently invested 18% of a microblogging service, Sina Weibo, which is obviously huge, with a $586 million investment, has bought into a mapping firm called AutoNavi, also invested in an outbound travel site called Quire, Q-Y-E-R, to boost its travel e-commerce service. A lot of this seems like what Yahoo wants to do as well. And because Yahoo has a 24% stake in Alibaba, Alibaba has to report its earnings to Yahoo. So this kind of got bundled into Yahoo saying, look, the numbers are really great. However, if you watch the video stream or you were following the earnings report, Mayer attributed the decent quarter for Yahoo to the fact that Yahoo had acquired some really great companies, had made these great changes to its legacy services like Flickr and Yahoo Mail. But if you look at the numbers with Alibaba, which had an amazing quarter, that company is on track to generate more annual revenue than Yahoo itself. So I guess my question is, when you look at the numbers here, is something like Alibaba almost Yahoo's best asset, even though Yahoo would not like us to think of it that way? Jason, what do you think?
Yeah, so Alibaba's just looking like a monster, right? One of the best moves that Yahoo made in sort of a long period when they weren't doing real well was the tie-up with Alibaba. I mean, I have to say this for Yahoo. None of us were really talking much about Yahoo anymore, right? It was sort of yesterday's tech. And sadly, in many cases, even though sometimes still used some of their services like Flickr or other things, you know, they have a completely new energy around everything they're doing. And I think that, you know, a lot of that is tied to Marissa Meyer getting the CEO job, doing things different, not always, you know, drawing lots of criticism. But at least when they're drawing criticism, we're still talking about them. And when we're talking about them, even, you know, the Alibaba thing, we're still talking about them. And for them, I think that's a small win. And obviously, they have to translate that into doing some more innovative things and pulling back more users that they lost in years, you know, I think over the past 2 or 3 years. But I think in general, they feel like they're going in the right direction. They feel like they have the right kind of energy to do some innovative things again. And when they announce things, when they buy somebody interesting, or they announce that they've, you know, done something like clean up Flickr you know, do things better, I'm not surprised anymore, because it feels like they're leaning in, as the famous Sharon. Her book recently. Sheryl Sandberg. Thank you. So I totally feel that about Yahoo right now. So when the earnings were announced yesterday, not surprised that they're doing pretty well. It seems to reflect the overall energy that they've got going right there.
Yeah, I think Alibaba is buying some time for Marissa Meyer, which is not a bad thing for her. Let's take a quick break and thank our other sponsor for today's show, ProXPN. We have lots of stories. We've got one coming up about spying on the internet, people seeing traffic. And even if you're not worried about the government spying on things, you should be worried about anybody spying on things if you're out on a public Wi-Fi hotspot. If you're out in a hotel or a cafe or an airport, you probably want to use VPN so that people can't see the packets that you're sending and receiving. And ProXPN, a global VPN, is a great solution for this. You can use it anywhere in the world. It works with almost any internet connection. It creates a secure encrypted tunnel through which all your online data passes back and forth. Any online application can work with ProXPN. It's just passing the packets. It's not looking. You can use your web browser, your email, your file sharing, instant messaging programs. Keeps everything you do online hidden from prying eyes. Disguises your physical location and gives you unfettered access to any website or online service, no matter where you live or travel to. I used it when I was on vacation in French Polynesia, not because I was worried about French Polynesia looking at my traffic, but I was worried about, you know, who else is on this network at the hotel. I don't know who else is on the network at the airport. Complete online privacy through a 512-bit encryption tunnel, world-class customer support, bypass internet filtering, and blocked websites. ProXPN also works with your iOS or Android device, allowing you to use your data plan or public corporate Wi-Fi with complete and total privacy on the go. No app required. Go to proxpn.com/twit for more information and to sign up. ProXPN premium accounts are normally $9.95 a month or $74.95 for an entire year, but we've got a special offer. Use the code TNT20 and receive 20% off your lifetime of your account. That's less than $5 a month on the yearly plan. If you're not satisfied, you can cancel within 7 days for a full refund. That's go to proxpn.com/twit and use that offer code TNT. Thank ProXPN for their support of Tech News Today. All righty then. Let's talk a little bit about spying. Microsoft General Counsel Brad Smith took to the TechNet blog, we heard in the news views, saying, "We do not provide any government with the ability to break the encryption, nor do we provide the government with the encryption keys. When we are legally obligated to comply with demands, we pull the specified content from our servers where it sits in an unencrypted state, and then we provide it to the government agency. Enterprise users get a little more protection." Microsoft actually refers the government directly to the customer in that sense. So Microsoft is using some strong language. They're saying, "We want the U.S. Attorney General to personally take action to allow Microsoft to share as much as info as possible." They say it's their constitutional right. There's a common thread going on here. We saw it with Yahoo, which did receive a court win yesterday. We've seen it with Google's request. A company is accused of providing direct access, as shown in an NSA document that leaks. That company then denies that direct access exists, says it only provides specific access after legal request. Then that company wishes it could say more to make that point clear. Now, this is pr- pretty clearly not just a denial, or Microsoft would not imply that the Attorney General is not upholding the Constitution here. Jason, what do you think is really going on here?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Whenever I see a statement from, and we should all do this, whenever I see a statement from a lawyer or a PR person, especially professionally, I look at what they're not saying as much as what they're saying, right? Because they're masters of sleight of hand, of saying one thing that sounds like a full patent denial when in fact it is not. And so that's what some of the things that Microsoft said, such as, we do not provide any government with direct access to emails or instant messages, full stop. So the key word for me there was direct access. So they don't provide direct access, but what does that mean? Does that mean we provide, you know, moderated access? Does that mean what are they trying to get at? So they choose their words very carefully on things like this. So obviously that's the first thing for me is like, okay, what kind of access do they provide? And then this other bit of, you know, talking about the Attorney General, Microsoft, you know, saying what the Attorney General should do, personally take action, to share kind of what's really going on, is a little bit, that tells me that there's some kind of gag order in place, right? Where they can't even really talk about what's fully going on, because that's part of, you know, the feds showing up and telling Microsoft, look, we're coming to look at data. Here's what you have to do. And, you know, by law, we have the right to do this and you can't say anything about it. We know that some of that exists already. And obviously Microsoft's not real happy about that because they can't fully defend themselves on a lot of this. I tend to believe some of the leaks and things that have come from people like Edward Snowden about the fact that they pretty much are going in and looking at whatever they want, or at least they're going in and demanding whatever they want. And maybe Microsoft, I think what they're trying to say is they don't have a server inside of our data centers and access to anything that they want at any time. That's kind of how I'm interpreting the statement from Microsoft's general counsel. That doesn't preclude the fact that maybe the NSA is coming in and saying, we want access to all everything from this ISP, or, you know, all of your messages that are going through this ISP, because we know there's weird stuff going on there or suspect data. So that's kind of my take on it at this point.
We've seen Yahoo and Google both publicly say that they want to be able to disclose more information, want to make sure that they're not being perceived as the bad guys. And if Microsoft didn't bother to put out a statement like this, they'd be perceived as complying. So without doing this kind of statement, it's almost like you have to say something now. If you've been implicated already by this whole spying thing, you better say that we want to show you this information. You want to be transparent, because otherwise you'll be perceived as evil at this point. It's like you have to say something or you're the bad guy.
True. And there's been rumors for years.
You accuse the Attorney General of not upholding the Constitution, though. That seems pretty bold.
Well, that's true. I think that, I don't know. I mean, I think that's a little bit of blather on Microsoft's part, you know, and because the Attorney General is a more of a political kind of figure, you know, you can take hits at political figures and still smell like roses. But you're right, Tom. I mean, it is pretty strong. But the interesting thing to me too is that, you know, Microsoft's been accused for years of having back doors in it that the U.S. government can take advantage of, and it's why a lot of foreign governments and foreign companies have chosen to use open source software and other non-solutions, non-Microsoft solutions, because of the fear, even if it is not reality, which who knows, I kind of doubt it, but even if it's not reality, the perception is that Microsoft, being a U.S. company and, being a good U.S. citizen, that they may, you know, in fact, have sort of some of these leaks and direct access with the U.S. government. So this is a pretty strong statement from Microsoft, all in all. I'd agree.
Yeah, but Google itself also claimed First Amendment allows them to say stuff, but they didn't go into it. So it's just claiming First Amendment doesn't mean that they're it's a huge accusatory tone. It's just saying the Constitution, that's quite vague, saying, actually, hey, you're the Attorney General, we're going to throw this big document at you. Here's the Constitution. Somewhere in there, and the Bill of Rights, we count. So I don't know if it was that strong a message.
As we always say with these discussions, if you want more detail on how this stuff might work, you got to go listen to Security Now. Steve Gibson has done a great job of talking about this issue in detail. Let's move on to iPhone rumors. It's been a while, Sarah.
Yeah, just since the news views, in fact, and you guys might need a refresher. So the iPhone 5S may or may not be delayed. But as I mentioned, Jefferies analyst Peter Mazek says, well, I've got sources that say that the manufacturing partners are going to be making iPhone 5Ss. That's just, you know, the naming convention we think Apple will probably use later this month. And sources familiar with the company's plans say, yeah, that's true. And those lower cost iPhones are not only real, but they're already in production. They should be priced between about $300 and $400 US dollars, or the equivalent of that, unsubsidized. Apple is planning to, according to sources, make between 25 and 30 million units total, which would be an even split between the 5S and that lower cost iPhone, which is kind of interesting, especially, and it kind of makes sense, especially when you think of Apple bundling in its latest iPad numbers. Once the iPad mini was out and then there was the full size iPad, the iPad numbers as far as shipped and sold were massive, but Apple didn't really break out what was what. Mazek says that something between $300 and $400 is not really going to compete with truly low-end handsets, though, that are popular in emerging markets. But Apple probably doesn't care. And there's actually kind of an interesting chart down at the bottom of that All Things D article, Jason, if you can find it, that the mid-range market almost has the most potential. There's sort of it's like a sideways bell curve that shows in the very, very low end of price, you've got a really big market. And then the high end of price, you've got, you know, your iPhones and your Galaxy S4s and that sort of thing. But that mid-range is almost the biggest land grab here. An interesting story that's, I think, somewhat related is that in India, the iPhone 5 launched in India back in November, did pretty well. But Apple sold a total of 120,000 smartphones in India in Q1 of this year, which is a 47% decrease from what it sold in the last quarter of 2012. Now, that's for all smartphones. But if you say, all right, well, the iPhone 5 got launched in November, people who wanted to buy the iPhone 5 did. And there's a huge drop off. India, not only an emerging market, but a very large market, might be just the perfect opportunity for Apple to come in that kind of mid-range market and sell a ton of these low-end iPhones that seem more like mid-range smartphones. Jason, do you think that this is exactly what exactly how Apple is hoping things will play out?
You know, this is, I think they're absolutely doing a low-end or mid-range, a low-end iPhone that probably is more like mid-range. I don't see them trying to, they've never tried to compete at the very bottom of any market. Even when they owned iPod, you know, they had 90% market share in iPod. It was still not the cheapest product on the market. Never was. I can't see them breaking strategy and doing that. So I think it is more likely. I've actually been curious about this myself, and this chart I think is pretty interesting stuff and pretty good analysis on, you know, where is Apple going, right? Microsoft, we know, is really going after that, and Nokia, they have said time and time again that they want to go after that lower feature phone kind of market, and I think they'll price pretty low to go after it. I don't think Apple wants to get into that game. Android, we know, is already at that game, not just because it's open and anybody can grab it and do something with it. You could do a really cheap Android phone, not have necessarily even Google Play Marketplace on it, but do something really low cost. And I expect we're going to see even more of that. But this mid-tier, this chart's a great opportunity to show, like, all those people in there that kind of, they're not super gung-ho for a smartphone, but they know their next one that they're going to buy, they're going to buy something that can do a little bit more, maybe run a few apps and that kinds of thing. I just anecdotally, I do see lots of those people out there right now who are ready to buy a smartphone, their first or maybe second smartphone. They might have bought their first smartphone. It might have been like Motorola Droid or even a sort of the second or third generation off of the current iPhone when they went and whatever was sort of there and cheap at the you know, free to $100 range. I think that maybe Apple's going. I think it makes a lot of sense to go there. And it is really interesting to see that there's a huge market opportunity there. There was also that rumor. Did you guys see the rumor that the iPhone 5 was delayed? This was another, I think, All Things D story today that came out. They were saying that there's a delay because it's instead of going with a 4-inch screen, that the iPhone 5S would be going with a 4.3-inch screen. I think that's totally bunk, by the way.
Yeah, we mentioned that in the news views.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. Yes. I don't go for that rumor at all. I think if you're going to delay it, I think it would have to be like 4.7, 4.85. I can see them delaying for that, but I can't see them delaying for 4.3. They're not going to convince anybody that they haven't already got to go from 4 to 4.3. You agree?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think that they have to stay on target. They can't do any more delays. I don't think the market is going to be tolerant of that. What people are delaying is purchasing a new smartphone. That could be a bigger problem for the iPhone. As you've been looking at a couple of stories out there today.
Yeah, this is in the U.S. anyway. A UBS report is saying that the rates at which American cell phone users are trading in their devices has declined over the last few years. Now, they turned negative last year. Last year, 68 million people upgraded their phones, down more than 9% from a year earlier. So UBS predicts that upgrades will fall again this year. And the journal is citing two components to the trend. Smartphone penetration in the U.S. is at 70%. So there's a lot less feature phone users to upgrade their devices. And then two, the perception that innovation is slowing down because people aren't seeing the big hooks going from an iPhone 5 to a 5S or a Galaxy S3 to an S4. In worldwide, though, things are doing a lot better. It's probably why Apple's probably thinking about going to mid-range styles phones, because there's analysts are still expecting smartphones to see strong gains overseas. By 2017, according to IHS, they're saying that worldwide smartphone shipments are expected to hit 1.5 billion units. And so right now, it seems like in the U.S., people aren't caring about this. We're seeing some weird plans from AT&T, T-Mobile, and Verizon rumored with their Edge program. Jason, have smartphones just become so stale in the U.S. that nobody's seeing the whiz-bang features of eye tracking or gesture waving and all that weird stuff?
Yeah, I think it's mostly a contract thing. People do tend to wait out their contracts. I think only the most of the enthusiasts that really break their contract. I think there were some people in the last few years that maybe broke contract in order to get a smartphone, or maybe they had a smartphone that they were frustrated with and they wanted to get a different one. But now when you get most of these smartphones, they're pretty good. I mean, it's even if you're getting something that's not the top of the line or the you know, one of those top 2, 3, 4, 5 hottest models, they're still solid. They're still good. And most of the people I know are generally that have bought a phone in the last year, they're pretty happy with their phone. So I think a lot of this is a function of the phones getting better. And some of it's just in the U.S., the lock-in that the carrier, I mean, the carriers really have you, especially now they're charging you these $350, $375 fees to break your contract. I mean, I think that's as much to do with it as anything, those two factors. Whereas I do see, you know, we have an office in Singapore, and when I go over there, they seem to be, a lot of them will pay full price. This is really interesting. They'll pay full price for their phone and, you know, put their SIM in it, or sometimes they'll get a little bit of a discount. The whole model works differently, but I see them upgrading almost every year. It seems like they want sort of the hottest devices. A lot of the folks over there, and they will spend, it's almost like buying a new computer. It seems like they put more stock in their phones than even their computers. And so they'll upgrade their phones once a year, but they'll have a laptop that's 3, 4, 5 years old and kind of deal with it because they just dig their phones more. So there are different dynamics. And so I do completely agree the international when I have seen that in action, that in international circles, this isn't slowing down.
Yeah, I feel like it's a mature market in some ways, at least in the United States. And we no longer feel like, I wish the iPhone had 3G. Oh, the new one does. I'm going to get that. Or I wish it had a better camera. Oh, the new one does. I'm going to get that. Now we're not as uncomfortable with the phones we have now. Maybe we're just old fuddy-duddies, and unlike the people internationally. I don't know.
Well, but there's also... Sorry, there are these new offerings.
When it was 150, when it was 150 bucks, right? It's like, okay, I'm going to upgrade to get, you know, the iPhone 3S or iPhone 3GS to the iPhone 4. You know, 150 bucks, you're halfway through or whatever, you know, you maybe it's only 100 bucks to upgrade. Like, that's one thing. I knew a lot of people that did that. But now it's like that it's 375 bucks. It makes you think, which is exactly what the carriers want. You know, it makes you think twice before turning that phone in and getting something. You have to really want something to pay, you know, 200, 250, 300 bucks to break your contract, I think.
Sarah, what were you going to say?
Sorry, Sarah.
I was just going to say, I think it's interesting that we're seeing some new contracts thinking outside the box of being able to upgrade a device twice a year or even once a year. That's something that people just aren't used to. So I wonder how much that is going to influence the behavior of consumers who aren't upgrading their devices now. I mean, I'm not upgrading my device because it's expensive and it's a hassle. So if it's, you know, seems at least reasonable enough monetarily and less of a hassle, maybe we'll do that more. It's hard to say what is influencing what.
All right, let's move on to the randomizer. I did a little pre-show prep with our chat room, if you're watching this on the download later on. We have two stories. One is about a battery that is receiving its power by your urine. You put urine in it, and then it processes it to make electricity. The other one is about traveling by pneumatic tube from New York to Los Angeles in 45 minutes. Looks like traveling by pneumatic tube. I would not have guessed this. 45 votes to 16 votes.
Yeah, you're in
47
for a surprise,
votes
apparently.
To 16 votes. So, Elon Musk has got a plan. He says August 12th, he'll make the plans available. He's going to kind of, I don't know if it's open source or he's going to open up the plans for traveling by pneumatic tube and 45 minutes, New York to LA. Ain't bad. You'd be traveling like the change that you used to drop off at the bank.
That is crazy. Can you imagine?
2 hours to Beijing.
People would be 2 hours to Beijing. Wow. So, I mean, can you imagine? I mean, it's just like anything. If that was, if it's real, it changes so many things. Transportation, you know, is totally an economic catalyst and a, you know, geographical game breaker. I mean, people would commute. People would literally commute, especially in New York. People are already commuting an hour to an hour and a half to get into town, right? People would commute from L.A. to New York. That's insane to even think about, like, in our lifetime, if that could happen.
I could be in studio from L.A.
Well,
take the pneumatic tube.
The car holds, like, six people in the information I've read, and it takes, if you're going in the U.S., it's about 370 miles per hour. I'm just really curious what the human body is going to, or how it's going to react to that. And then if you're trying to go to Beijing, I believe it goes 4,000 miles an hour. So I'm really hoping that those cars are very well pressurized and such, because I don't even know what – I mean, this is like astronaut training you would need just to be able to go to work.
Yeah.
Details, details.
Oh, sorry.
It's fine. The science of this has actually been well vetted, but nobody's actually done it yet. So
you probably pay through the teeth for a house around one of these stops. Also, by the way,
house prices. Oh, you're by the skyrocketing.
The pneumatic tube stop in your neighborhood. It's if Futurama. You want your house price,
we need no cars like Futurama. Let's just, you know,
yeah, exactly.
The train situation in the U.S. is already so good. I mean, this just seems like the next logical step, doesn't it?
Yeah, right. Well, that's why Elon Musk is doing this, because he was looking at this high-speed rail in California that's really expensive and is going to be the slowest high-speed rail built in the world. And he's like, that's ridiculous. Let's come up with something better. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see what's on the calendar, Sarah.
Well, Verizon has teased an event for July 23rd. Everybody's got their events. What will it be? New droids, perhaps? Google is also holding its own press event with Android and Chrome chief Sundar Pichai on July 24th.
I bet that's the Android OS. That's my guess there. Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
It's a message from Rami about phones. He says, greetings, TNT crew. I'm an international listener from Italy, and I'm among those who don't care much about the U.S.-specific discussions, mainly all those about telephony operators. But in yesterday's show, you just blew my mind. The new plans with the Galaxy S4 will cost the users $90, $140 per month, Are your operators crazy? Last October, I bought a Galaxy S3, paid its upfront cost of 480 euros. My plan is a simple one without monthly minutes or messages. I use Line for free messaging and includes 1 gigabyte of data. And that works with Skype and other audio video apps and tethering. And this cost me 5 euros per month. For 2,000 minutes of calls, 500 messages, and 2 gigabytes of data, I have to pay 10 euros per month, way below your monthly fees. On the other hand, the unlocked devices here cost more. An unlocked S4 costs around 650 euros. iPhone 5, the base model, 730 euros, which is much higher than unlocked phones here at your end. Just wanted to write my thoughts about the subject.
Nice. Thanks, Brom. It's great to have that outside perspective, because one of the reasons that most of us talk from a U.S. perspective is that's where we live. So that's why we include the feedback, so we can get those other perspectives in the show as well. Appreciate you writing in. Well, that is it for this show. Jason Heiner, thank you so much. TechRepublic.com looks great. Love the relaunch. Love what you're doing over there. Let folks know a little bit about what they can expect.
Yeah, so the relaunch was really just a beginning to, you know, sort of a fresh new platform to kind of start from the ground up. So it's the biggest change that we've made since we launched the site in 1999. We're really refocusing on content and on depth. You know, that's the stuff that's always done really well that users have loved the most. And so we're going to refocus on providing lots of usable tips, actionable tips for technologists, as well as doing some deeper dive. So we have some more exciting stuff in coming. Also, you have it up on screen there, Tech Pro Research. We also have a premium product. It used to be called Tech Republic Pro. We spun it out into its own product, which is a joint venture between ZDNet and Tech Republic called Tech Pro Research, where we're offering exclusive content that you can get. Again, that's also more in-depth stuff. You'll get stuff from myself, Larry Dignan, Mary Jo Foley, Ed Bott, Bill Detweiler. That stuff will only be behind the paywall. That's some of our longer form stuff that is more kind of financially focused on the financials of running an IT department, of making good tech decisions, all that kind of stuff. And then we're also doing some longer stories. We have a new long form template, a special immersive kind of article template that's has almost everything stripped off the page except the article and some really great photos. And so we'll be debuting that over the next couple of weeks as well.
Excellent. Check it out, techrepublic.com. And of course, don't forget about our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com, where you can vote on the stories of the day or even submit the stories of the day. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, or give us a call and leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT show. We'll be back tomorrow with Vlad Suvov as our guest. See you then.